listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. A lot of concern about the public health system and what's happening in our hospitals.
Yes.
We're very fortunate indeed to have Derek Humphreys with us, a nurse recently fed up and left. Is that right, Derek?
Pretty much, yeah. Yep.
How long were you a nurse for?
Oh, God. I'm 68 now, so I'm semi-retired anyway. So, yeah, I was a nurse for years.
And did you enjoy it?
Oh, I loved it. I mean, one of the critical things for me was that I was caring for people. I was helping or trying to help people get well. And I enjoy working with people.
And you worked in the hospital?
Yes, I worked in the Lower Hutt Hospital, worked at Wellington Hospital in a variety of roles.
And are there different sorts of nurses, or a nurse just gets different roles?
Yes, there are different types of nurses, Rodney. There are now a number of different qualification routes that nurses can take. When I trained, it was actually through the hospital system, which was then gotten rid of, and they went to the Canadian model where they had polytechs. And now, of course, we have university as well. So a student nurse could typically, for example, go to Victoria University now, do a 3 to 4 year nursing course and be qualified. And then there are other qualifications on top of that which allow them to practice, for example, LNP, which is a licensed nurse practitioner, which allows them to diagnose and up to a certain point treat patients directly. Mm. But then there are also a myriad of other qualifications, for example, critical care nursing, anesthesia and so forth, and then there are theatre nurses. So a myriad of jobs in the nursing sector within the New Zealand hospital system.
When you started out, it's less odd now, but when you started out, was it considered odd to be a male and say, what do you do? Oh, I'm a nurse.
Yes, it was. I would often get, oh, you're a male nurse. No, actually, I'm just a nurse. My gender doesn't matter. My qualifications, my skills, my knowledge are exactly the same as a female nurse. And then, of course, there were always the questions, are you gay? Well, no, actually not. Married, two boys. And then, of course, are you a pedo? Are you a pervert? You know, a lot of things like that. But I think, fortunately,
isn't it? That has changed.
It is. But I think it has changed to a large degree. People are becoming a lot more tolerant.
How does it go? And this cuts both ways, right? But how does it go when it comes to private parts and bathing and toileting patients between the sexes? How does that work?
Well, it's a very, very interesting question, Rodney. I mean, a lot of it, I think, is around informed consent. Yes. So, for example, were I to be working on a ward, I would be given a number of patients to take care of. And they might be male, female. And so particularly for me as a guy with the female patients, what I would do is I would go to them and I would say, hi, I'm Derek, I'm your nurse today. Are you okay with me looking after you? And I would explain some of the procedures that I had to do and so forth. And I said, if you are uncomfortable at any point, I can have a junior nurse or a CNA come in and be there with me to make sure that you're safe. So a lot of it really, Rodney, was about respecting, and yes, it still is, it's about respecting the person. Mm. You know, I mean, I've had male patients who've said, oh, I don't want a male looking after me. And I've said, well, you know, okay, well, that's fine. And if they say, look, no, I don't want to have a male person looking after me, we try within the hospital system to accommodate them as best as we can.
Yes. My mother spent the last week of her life in hospital and had a lot of male nurses.
Yep.
And I was a bit iffy But my mother was very relaxed. And I've got to tell you, the male nurses were the best.
Yeah,
it was quite funny, mainly because they had a strength in lifting her and holding her and supporting her.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt a lot more comfortable with having that strength.
Yeah, that is very certainly an aspect. I mean, I can remember having elderly patients, both male and female, and, you know, I'm not a small guy, and I could lift them quite comfortably by myself, and, you know, and do so safely. But again, as I say, a lot of it, the biggest thing with nursing is having that respect, the humility, the compassion to care for people. Good and I think that when people like your mother recognize that these nurses, whether they be male or female, have that, they feel a lot safer.
No, my mother loved, and the male nurses were fantastic, and some of them were island guys. And they were big, like, I mean, tall and broad. And, man, you know, you see the little dainty Filipino nurses, female, and you're thinking, I know who I'd like supporting me to the toilet. You know what I mean?
oh, for sure. Yeah, no, for sure. I do.
Bare thigh was about the girl's, you know, body. Derek, you enjoyed your time nursing. You loved helping people, but towards the end of your career, the bureaucracy got the better of you.
Yes, it did. The big problem, and as you know, Rodney, we have some massive problems within the healthcare system in New Zealand now. And one of those problems is that we have become top heavy in management. And unfortunately, those people who are there, not all of them, obviously, but some of them are there for their own end only. And so you get stupid decision-making. And, you know, the pressure on nurses today is massive. I don't think that the public really truly understands just how much pressure nurses are under at the moment. I mean, you know, we look back at, for example, COVID, and the nursing staff, the doctors, all of the people in the medical profession put their lives on the line because, again, you know, they cared, they had compassion, and they had humility. And they worked some horrendous hours, were separated from their families and so forth. Nowadays, obviously, we don't have as much of an issue with that, but the shortage of staff is massive, and the pressure to work extra shifts, to do, you know, things that essentially create mental stress, tiredness, and the risk from that, obviously, is directly to the patients. Because if you imagine, for example, with your mother, who, you know, obviously was in terminal care, having a nurse who is tired, stressed, are they going to provide the best care? Certainly they're going to try, but there's always a potential for something to slip through the cracks. And unfortunately with health, when something slips through the cracks, often people die, and that's the sad reality of it. I have not heard of too many situations where this happening, but, you know, it is not, we are not in a good place.
Has it been a continual slide, or have there been abrupt slides? Abrupt dips that you can point the finger?
Well, I think generally it has been a gradual decline. If you look back 15, 20 years ago, New Zealand was in the top 5 in the world for quality of healthcare. We're now down, I think, at about 12th or 16th.
Wow.
And honestly, I don't see it getting any better. Certainly under the current government, it's going to, I believe, get worse because they are not interested truly in the health of New Zealanders. They are interested in cutting costs. And unfortunately, one of the things that I'm going to talk with you about in a short wee while is a classic example of this. So first of all, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and this has been in the mainstream media, there was a woman who was down in Dunedin Hospital, and she had to have a cesarean birth. Now, that, you know, is quite traumatic for any woman, especially when it's not scheduled to happen. And so she had her cesarean, the baby was born, that was all fine and well. But then she went to use the shower in Dunedin Hospital. No hot water.
Yes.
You know, have a cold shower. Nice. And she was there for 3 days and there was no hot water.
How can there be no hot water in a hospital?
Good question. I think that is a question that should be directly put to the powers that be at Dunedin Hospital. But, I mean, we all know, of course, that Christopher Luxon at the beginning of the year promised the good citizens of Dunedin a Ferrari of a hospital.
Mm.
And they've now backtracked on that.
They've got to clap that Mini Cooper that's sometime in the distance.
My God. You know, and yet the thing that absolutely stuns me is that they can turn around and say, well, we're going to spend $3 billion on 2 kilometres of roadway and cycle lanes in Wellington City.
Mm.
The very $3 billion they were saying, well, we don't have for Dunedin Hospital.
It's crazy, right? Because
yeah, absolutely,
these politicians,
crazy.
It's very hard for them to have a grasp of the numbers that they're talking about. They should get away with $1 billion and measure everything in numbers of hospitals or something, you know. Or,
well,
you know, yeah, that road will cost one hospital, that road will cost two, or, you know, that climate change initiative is going to cost you 6 hospitals because they penny pinch here and there and stuff that would be useful and then spend it on stuff that has no value. And they don't sort of, it doesn't add up to a total budget in their head. It doesn't compute to them.
No, I think that when you have a prime minister who says, oh, financially I'm sorted, it's a case of, well, when I was younger, there used to be a saying, she'll be right, mate.
Yes.
I don't know if you'll know that one.
Indeed.
Nowadays, I think it's, I'm all right, Jack, stuff you.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and I'm being a bit blunt here, but frankly.
But that's right through society now, isn't it?
It is.
Our leaders are just part of that. It's a horrible thing. It's a horrible thing.
It is. But, you know, the interesting thing about this, Rodney, is, and this is, you know, they talk about budgets, right? Now, here's the thing. If you have a healthy country, a healthy population, so, for example, and I'm going to use the example of Norway because that is in the top, I think it's either in first, second, or third place in the world.
Yep.
And they have a similar population to us. They're at about 5 million. Now, if you're in Norway and you get sick, you go into hospital, they operate, they get you better, and you're back out at home, looked after until you're well enough to go back to work. Unfortunately, here, there isn't the budget to do that. Now, here's the logic of this, Rodney. If you have a healthy population, if you get rid of your backlogs of surgery, of you know, people who require urgent surgery, but also non-urgent, but needed surgery to live a healthy life. What happens with those people? They go back into the workforce. And when they go back into the workforce, they start paying taxes.
Mm.
So if you have a healthy population, you have a higher tax take. It also eventually lowers the cost of health.
Because people are working.
Because people are working and because people are healthy.
It has a problem, isn't it? Because the politicians are looking at the top line of what it all costs.
Yep.
The previous government just printed money and paid for things. This crowd are saying, well, we've got to be more careful. But they're not looking at, is there a better way of doing things?
No, they're not.
All the money has to siphon through the managers.
Don't get me started on that.
No one believes me, but I worked, my father and all my uncles and cousins worked for a trucking firm.
Yeah.
North Canterbury Transport.
I've heard of them, yeah.
They would have employed hundreds of people in the day. They had one wage clerk who was my cousin. There's no HR.
No.
There's no employment contract.
No.
You just turned up, did a week's work, and you got paid. And if you did a good job, they looked after you. Yeah, they looked after you. And if you, I don't know of anyone getting sacked, actually, but that was sort of how it worked. And the idea that there would be managers was inconceivable, or head office. You know, there was a little wee house that had a wage clerk in it and a guy that did the accounts and maybe an assistant. The idea that there would be this huge head office with managers running around is inconceivable.
Illogical.
Illogical. You look at any business now and they're overloaded with compliance. They're filling out forms galore for the government and ticking boxes and goodness knows what.
Yep.
You can't go to the bathroom without doing a health and safety check. You go across to the state sector and it's 100 times worse. You go into the hospitals. These now, managers get in the way of everything.
Here's an interesting thing. If you look at the health department, Lester Levy has been tapped on the shoulder to run that. At approximately $350,000 for a part-time role.
Wow.
And the bosses at Te Whatu Ora, the senior people there are on salaries of $600,000 to $800,000 a year. I think the chief executive of Te Whatu Ora is on about $890,000 a year.
It doesn't make sense, does it?
No, it doesn't make sense. And unfortunately, what happens is that they get into these cushy positions and they say, right, well, I'm going to make sure that I stay here because I want to earn this much money. And
they have their mates in the bureaucracy work out what they're worth.
Yes, that's dead right.
And they have, politicians who are not spending their own money. Yep. And no profit or loss, and they say, oh, yeah, that sounds about right.
Now,
and suddenly it's 800,000.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing, you know, when we were talking about Dunedin Hospital earlier on, one of the interesting things that occurred was they had a round of consultancy. And so they, I think it was the Labor government, took on an overseas consultancy firm to do the design project management of the hospital. We could have had a New Zealand company do that. However, what they did was they got some of the top consultants and the people in Dunedin, but from around New Zealand, some of the top consultants, and they said, okay, how do we build this thing? Yeah. What do you need? And so the consultants and the doctors and the clinical staff said, well, this is what we need. And they said, okay, fine, thank you very much. And they went away. And they came back with a plan. Oh, no, that's too expensive. We're going to have to reduce it. This happened, I think, 6 times. And each of those consultancy rounds cost over $1 million. $6 million wasted with consultants. Here's the thing. Doctors, nurses, physicians, senior people within the hospital system, they know what they need. They can design it for you.
Yes.
Why waste $6 million when you've already got a workforce there who can tell you what they need?
And that's how Elon Musk works.
Yeah. I wouldn't use him as a shining example of a human being. But, yeah, exactly, though. You know, the management
people. He doesn't have layers and layers and layers of management.
Exactly. Yeah, that is one thing I will say in his favor. But, you know, we could have built Dunedin Hospital. Dunedin Hospital could be built by now.
Yep.
If it hadn't been for a whole waste of money and waste of time with consultants and, put it bluntly, farting around trying to cut budgets.
Tell me some of your stories.
Okay. This will be an interesting one for you. Approximately 6 months ago, I was in hospital as a patient. I had a series of heart attacks.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Are you okay now?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm doing fine.
Good.
Well, while I was there, a good friend of mine, whom I've known for some years, is a senior consultant in the emergency department at Wellington Hospital. And we constantly chat about the health system. So he had come up to visit me in the ward to see how I was doing. And while I was there, one of the cardiac surgeons came into the room to visit another patient. And when he saw my friend Paul, he said, "Oh, Paul, what are you doing here?" And he said, "Oh, I'm visiting my friend Derek." So the three of us started chatting. And Paul explained to the other person, we'll call him Bob, to protect his identity, because what I'm about to tell you is going to curl your toes and probably ruffle quite a few feathers. And he said to Paul, he said, "You know, guess what happened this morning?" And Paul said, "Oh, what?" And he said, "Well, I had a meeting with management. And they asked me how many heart valve operations I thought that I had done this year." So that was 6 months into the year. And he said, "Oh, roughly 150 to 160. And this buffoon from management said, "No, you've done 166. We've only budgeted for 35. You need to stop." Now,
I'm sorry to laugh, but that is so absurd.
It is absurd. The thing,
people
the thing
that were needing heart valves.
Yeah, to keep them alive.
He's done 166.
Yep. They had budgeted for 35.
So he's over budget. There's 130 people who've had their lives saved that shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Yep. And no one else now can have a heart valve replaced.
Yeah.
Because management decided there'd only be 35.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the thing, and I'll explain for the viewers, because this is quite important. Heart valve surgery is normally what we refer to as emergent surgery. So, for example, someone like myself who had a heart attack, it may in part have been because of having a faulty valve in my heart. And to keep me alive, they need to go in and replace that valve. Otherwise, simply put, I die. It's called emergent surgery. It's not planned. You can't budget for it. And it is what it is. So, you know, what they are doing, Rodney, is basically saying to him, "We want you to allow patients to die." In other words, commit murder. And he asked them, he said, "Well, look, can you tell me what the cost of an arsenic tablet is?" And they said, no, why? And he said, well, I've got a choice. I either let them die slowly, painfully, or I give them an arsenic tablet and I kill them quickly.
Oh, goodness me.
If I kill them quickly, that will save you more money because they won't be in hospital.
Goodness me.
And the management person turned around and said, oh, that's ridiculous, and walked out of the meeting.
But what you're saying is that's in effect, they're just making it more miserable.
Exactly. But the thing is that essentially what it is, Rodney, is it is state-sanctioned murder.
Yes, because you're denying readily available care.
Yeah, exactly. We have the skills, we have the technology, we have the people to do the surgery, but you're not allowed to do it because it's over budget. Sorry, you can die.
And, well, it's not unbelievable, is it?
Sadly, no.
Has there been an uptick in heart valves, or why would he only have 35 when the guy's already halfway through the year done 166? How could he get it that wrong?
Oh, well, he didn't get it that wrong at all. And I don't think that I think that where they go wrong, Rodney, is that they try to cap things. They work, statistically, well, in 2018, we had, say, for example, 20. And then in 2020, we had 30. So we'll budget for 35. Now, obviously, there has been an increase. The reasons why, I would honestly say I have no idea. However,
some listeners might be surmising.
Yeah, they might. But I don't know that it's safe to do that. I don't know that it's safe to do that. I mean, there will be the COVID conspiracists out there who will say, oh, well, it's because of COVID. Honestly, I don't think so, personally. But
just to let you know, I'm one of those.
I'm happy to talk. Yeah, absolutely fine. And I respect that. But here's the thing. It doesn't really matter whether you believe that it's caused by COVID or whether it's
doesn't
not.
Matter. They need it the heart matter. Replaced. They need their heart valve replaced. Yes, I guess exactly. All I was thinking about was how did they get caught going from 166 plus a year and trying to manage with 35 seems to me so out of scope.
Yeah.
That I was struggling to understand how a manager could have his head in such a wrong place. That was all. I thought, I wonder if there's been an increase.
Well, I think if you go back to your analogy of Canterbury Transport.
Yes. Too many managers.
Yeah, too many managers.
There's that old joke about the rowing team, the rowing eight that had a manager.
Mm.
And then the rowing eight ended up with eight managers and one rower.
Yeah, that'd be about
and
right.
Surprisingly, they didn't do very well, so they fired the rower. Because the managers are the last ones to have their budgets cut.
Of course. Of course.
God, it's disgusting. Got any other stories?
I think
you must be loaded up with them.
Yes, I am. And look, I think that story is really the keystone of the whole discussion. And I don't know that we should possibly delve into anything more than that.
Yes, because if you're looking for a valve replacement,
yep,
and they say we can't do this till next year, you assume that you're not a priority.
Yep.
That they're very, very, very busy.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, they could be twiddling their thumbs because the management told them that they had to stop when they got to 35.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. One of the biggest issues that we have in the health system at the moment is the waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at the waiting lists for certain types of surgery, I can guarantee that there will be instances where the waiting time is real because of a lack of surgeons, because of a lack of nursing staff, and because of a lack of operating time.
Mm-hmm.
You then ask yourself, well, why is that? And the simple answer is because our health system is underfunded. We have nurses coming through the nursing system now, through the hospital, to work and being prepared to work in hospitals. And yet they're told, oh, well, we may not have a place for you. The hospitals are crying out for nurses. The hospitals are crying out for doctors. And yet nurses who have just completed their training are being told, well, we may not have a placement for you. How come?
But we're reluctant to pour more money in the top because the danger is we just increase the budgets of the managers.
Yes.
And it doesn't filter through to nurses, doctors, equipment, and patients being serviced.
Yeah. One thing I will tell you, Rodney, I had an interesting discussion some 5 or 6 weeks ago with Chris Hipkins.
Yeah.
And I said to him, Chris, I said, if you do get in the next election, I said, please employ me as your health department leader.
Yeah.
And he said, why? And I said, well, what I would do for a start is I would make every manager and every second level manager and third level manager justify their existence. Justify their budgets. And if they couldn't, they'd be gone. The health system in New Zealand is top heavy with management. Those people, and I'm sorry to say this, they're all probably very, very good, kind, loving, caring public servants, but they are draining the health system.
In 1988, we had the Gibbs Report. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Very well.
And that said that if we just applied the average efficiency in an American hospital, that is in terms of management and getting jobs done, the waiting list would be gone.
Yes and no. And I'm going to be very, very blunt on this one.
Please.
I have no time for the American health system.
Not at all.
For one very, very simple reason. We talked about New Zealand's place in the world. Do you have any idea where America is in the world, Rodney?
I do know exactly where it was because RFK has been talking about it every day.
Yeah, 42nd.
Yes.
42nd in the world. And yet, the interesting thing is that out of the top five hospitals in the world, four of them are American.
Mm.
They have some of the top surgeons, some of the top physicians, some of the top doctors in the world. And
but
yet,
of course,
the American health system is broken. And the funny thing is that they've got Lester Levy in there in the health department. And guess what his background is, Rodney? Privatized health.
But you see, can I be blunt?
Yep.
I would privatize our health system tomorrow.
Mm.
And then I'd say, we're going to spend whatever billion dollars that we've got, but we're only spending it where we see the results. We'll cover everyone. We'll be like the government, will be like the insurer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had a privately run hospital, those managers would be out on their backsides, wouldn't they?
Well, not necessarily. If you look at the insurance model that they use in the United States, they have Medicare.
Oh, I know. I concur with that. I concur with you. It's a bizarre range of incentives because if you've got insurance, the hospitals and the health system just pile it in. It's a total scam.
Yep.
And if you haven't got insurance, you die.
Yeah, exactly.
But what I'm saying is the government's job is to ensure that if you or I need a valve replaced, it happens.
Yep.
And I don't particularly care whether the hospital that I'm in is owned by the government or owned by a corporation. I just want my heart fixed. Yep. And I've got a sneaking suspicion that if it was privately owned and they were having to compete to do the job, I'd be a lot better looked after than I would be in an overblown, bureaucratized health system where literally nurses and doctors have lost the will to keep going because of the madness of the administration of the hospital.
Yes. Your point there, Rodney, I think is valid. However, if you look at the Norwegian system that I was referring to before, yes, that is completely state-run.
Yes.
Now, what the Norwegians do is they pay a fee as part of their tax that goes to the government, pretty much similar to what we do. And yes, what the government does is they invest that money so that, for example, last year's tax take was, say, $10 billion, just as an example. And they invest it and they get $1 billion. That $1 billion goes towards this year's
care. I got it. Yeah.
Right. So the government has basically, in Norway, they have trimmed their management to have very, very efficient system where tax comes in, it gets invested and goes straight back into health. The money that people pay for healthcare goes straight into health.
Mm.
It really is a very, very simple solution. If we adopted the Norwegian model, and bear in mind that we have similar population levels, I truly believe that we do not actually need privatization. What we do need is we need a health system that is funded where we get the right doctors, the right nurses, and we say to them, what do you need? So if Rodney turns up and says, look, I'm not feeling well, and they have a look at Rodney and they say, look, Rodney needs a heart valve operation. Right, bang, get it done. You don't look at the cost of the health of the nation. You look at the cost of the health of the person. The cost of the health of the nation comes after that.
Mm. Okay. Well, I've just been reading while you're talking because Google's an amazing thing about the Norwegian system. Look, we have such a lot to learn from the rest of the world.
Yeah.
I must say it doesn't rank high. They got a national healthcare system, as you say, post-World War II with the welfare state. The hospitals were run by the municipalities, but the government took them over in 2002.
Mm.
It's got four designated regional health authorities.
Yep.
And it says the Norwegian healthcare system, now this is Wikipedia, so I won't hang my head on it, we're ranked number 11 overall by the World Health Organization. That's in the year 2000.
Yep.
So that's back a bit.
They've gone up.
Okay. Well, that would be good to see. Because you don't have to reinvent the egg, right?
Yeah.
There's so much to learn. But that idea that we're sitting in New Zealand, it's a scandal, and that's the point of this interview. Mm. It's a scandal that a doctor's done 166 valve replacements, he's gone over his limit, which was 35, and he's not to do any more. This is insanity.
It is. Derek, it is, Rodney.
What would you like us to do to help our health system other than not get sick?
Oh, look, I mean, ideally, I think that what people need to do is that they need to, first of all, understand just how deeply the cuts that the current government are making are affecting them, their families, their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to step up and we need to say, not just to the national government, not just to the Labor government, but to Te Whatu Ora, to the Department of Health. Sort it out. Get it better.
Should it have a Maori name?
I don't think that it matters personally.
I don't know. I still don't know what Te Whatu Ora is.
Yeah. I have a small amount of Maori ancestry in me. But I'm not bothered either way.
I just find it confusing because if you say Health Ministry, Department of Education, I actually know, and so does every Maori, know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The proliferation of these Maori names, which, by the way, I thought this government was getting rid of, when you say it, I don't know whether you're talking about roading health or education. I truly do not.
Mm.
And I mean, because the words, I hear the words, but they don't resonate with meaning to me. Mm. And I actually have to memorize Te Whatu Ora, Te Whatu Ora, what the hell's that? What the hell's that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I understand. I understand where you're coming from. I mean, to me personally, I don't think that naming things makes them either better or worse.
Well, it doesn't help any Maori get better.
No, it doesn't. I think that it doesn't help anyone get better.
No. Okay, yeah. Derek. Well, thank you for coming out, and I hope you're well on the way with your recovery from your heart attacks.
Yes, thank you.
And I appreciate your care and concern as a nurse and for the system and sharing that story with us because it's truly horrific.
Mm.
We will follow up.
I wish you all the best.
Take care,
Derek. I'm sure that Shane Retty will be quietly covering his backside.
Oh, I'm going to put a note in and say, are there any caps on heart surgeries?
Mm-hmm.
Take care, Derek.
And the answer will probably come back, no, of course not.
Oh, yeah, of course not. No. You're on Rally Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. That was Derek, nurse, speaking to us. Lovely, lovely man. Been caring for us and been in care and vitally concerned as we all should be about our great health system.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.